Love and the Clans. Written by Barbara Cartland. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1876.
But you must marry sooner or later, and you must marry money.
The Dowager Duchess spoke up with a determined note in her voice that her son recognised only too well. The Duke of Baranlock walked to the window and looked out at the sea. "I have already told you, Mama," he said quietly, "that although the girls in London would have been only too willing to accept me because I am a duke, they will not fit here at the castle."
"I don't know what you mean by that," the Dowager Duchess replied.
"I think you do, Mama. You have always been a wonderful hostess to anyone who is staying here. Also, you know without my saying it, that everyone in the village loves you." For a moment she could not think of how to reply, and then, as she rose from her chair, in which she had been sitting with her sewing, she sighed.
"You can always have an answer to everything, Alpin, but at 27 it is high time you settled down and produced an heir."
She felt that now she had had the last word and had no wish to prolong the conversation. So therefore she walked out of the library, closing the door behind her. The Duke turned again to gaze at the sea. Baranlock Castle was indeed one of the north of Scotland's greatest houses. It had been built in 1400, and the chieftain of the MacBaran clan had always lived there. The Duke owned thousands of acres in the county of Sutherland, and the castle was undoubtedly one of the most beautiful buildings ever erected in Scotland. The only difficulty there had been down the ages was to make sure that there was an heir to the dukedom that came from a very ancient lineage. As the present duke was an only child, his mother and all his relations continually begged him, almost on their knees, to take a wife. The duke travelled a great deal and spent a certain amount of time every year in London, and as he was tall, handsome, and most intelligent, it was not surprising that ambitious mothers presented their daughters to him. Yet for some reason his family could not discover, he always returned from London alone, still a bachelor, and apparently with his heart untroubled.
"What you have to realise," his mother had said to him over and over again, "is that as head of the family and of the clan, it is your duty to marry and produce an heir, several sons, if possible. You must carry on the traditions we have all followed, even before the castle was built."
The Duke had heard this lecture so often, he knew every sentence by heart. But he listened to his mother because he loved her, and he knew that she adored him. He had heard the same plea over and over again, and it merely made him more determined than ever. He would not marry until he found someone he loved, and with whom he would know intuitively that he would be happy and content. Of course, there were women in his life, and a great number of them. His many and frequent affairs de cour had been well known in London and whispered about amongst the clan in Scotland. On his last visit, from which he had just returned, his name had been linked with one of the most beautiful and sensual ladies in Mayfair. She was, in fact, herself a baroness, and half English, half French. She was incredibly lovely, and her husband closed his eyes to her indiscretions. As he said to one of his friends confidentially,
"I am growing too old to be fighting a duel at dawn every other day, so I just close my eyes, shut my ears, and when my wife returns to me as she always does, I think not of the past, but of the future."
This strange laissez-faire attitude enabled the Duke to spend a very pleasant 2 months making love to the glamorous Baroness. He was entranced by her, as all her lovers were. Not only was it her alluring beauty that excited him, but the subtle way she invariably made him feel he was the only man in her life at that very moment. Now that he was back in Scotland, the Duke was having to listen to the usual family refrain that he should be married. If he did not do so, how would the MacBarons survive without a chieftain? "They survived under another chieftain before I was born," he had muttered yesterday to his mother, "and I imagine they will survive after I am dead.
I cannot think how you..."